Hi, Doctors Pharmacy listeners. It's Dr. Mark here. If you've been following me, you know that I'm obsessed with understanding the latest research on longevity and how we can apply it to our daily lives. So I wrote a book about it. Think of it as a roadmap to optimal aging. It's called Young Forever, and it comes out February 21st, 2023. It's never too early or too late to take control of your health, and this book will show you how. Visit youngforeverbook.com to learn more and pre-order now.
Coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
A lot of the suffering that we encounter in our minds is because we reject impermanence. We reject change. And that creates so much mental tension, so much mental struggle.
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. I know a lot of you out there are practitioners like me, helping patients heal using real food and functional medicine as your framework for getting to the root cause. What's critical to understanding what each individual person and body needs is testing, which is why I'm excited to tell you about Rupa Health. Looking at hormones, organic acids, nutrient levels, inflammatory factors, gut bacteria, and so many other internal variables can help us find the most effective path to optimize health and reverse disease. But up till now, that meant you are usually ordering tests for one patient from multiple labs. And I'm sure many of you can relate how time-consuming this process was, and then it could all feel like a lot of work to keep track of. Now there's Rupa Health, a place for functional medicine practitioners to access more than 2,000 specialty labs from over 20 labs like Dutch, Vibrant America, Genova, Great Plains, and more. Rupa Health helps provide a significantly better patient experience, and it's 90% faster, letting you simplify the entire process of getting the functional medicine lab tests you need and giving you more time to focus on patients. This is really a much needed option in functional medicine space, and I'm so excited about it. It means better service for you and your patients. You can check it out and look at a free live demo with a Q&A or create an account at rupahealth.com. That's rupahealth.com. Ground beef is probably the easiest protein out there that can be worked into any type of dish. I just love how quickly it can help us make a healthy meal. And when you go with grass-fed, you're getting a source of omega-3s and extra vitamins and minerals too. And with ButcherBox, I get 100% grass-fed and grass-finished beef delivered right to my doorstep, no matter which state I happen to be in. They also offer free-range organic chicken and wild-caught Alaskan salmon, which are part of my weekly meal plans too. Grass-fed ground beef is the first protein I recommend for people who are trying to get more comfortable in the kitchen because you can just throw it in a pan with some salt, herbs, and spices and make a great meal. But if you've been looking for a way to get more high-quality protein in your diet, make sure you check out the grass-fed beef from ButcherBox, along with all their other humanely raised antibiotic and hormone-free meats. They make eating well easy, delicious, and accessible. Right now, ButcherBox is proud to give new members two pounds of ground beef in your first box, plus 20% off. To receive this offer, go to butcherbox.com/pharmacy. That's butcherbox.com/pharmacy. That's F-A-R-M-A-C-Y to receive 2 pounds of ground beef plus 20% off. And now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. Welcome to The Doctor's Pharmacy. I'm Dr. Mark Hyman. That's pharmacy with an F, a place for conversations that matter. If you've ever felt lost or confused about who you are, where you're going, what's important in life, how to integrate your own well-being with your actual day-to-day practices, this is going to be the podcast you want to listen to because it's with a really inspiring man, someone I've not known personally until recently, but who's really inspired me through his work and his writings. His name, you might be familiar with him as Young Pueblo, but his actual name is Diego Perez, and he's a meditator, a New York Times bestselling author who's really known on social media, Instagram, and under this pen name, Young Pueblo, which we'll get into why he calls himself that. He has an audience of nearly 3 million people, which is a lot of people, and his writing focuses on the power of self-healing, creating healthy relationships, and the wisdom that comes when we truly work on knowing who we are. His books are really extraordinary. They're kind of meditations on life and love and growth and how we navigate without suffering, because there's so much suffering in the world now. And they personally helped me a lot, particularly when I was going through rough moments in my life. The first one is Inward. This is about really the relationship with yourself. Clarity and Connections are more about our relationships with others and ourself in those relationships. And his most recent book, Lighter, is about his own personal journey and his own story about how he came to know what he knows, which is pretty remarkable for a young man. So I'm excited about having Young Pueblo on the podcast. His book is amazing. It was an instant New York Times bestseller. And I think there's no accident because he's really struck a chord with so many people about the things that we struggle with today as a species. So welcome.
Thank you, Mark. I'm so happy to be here. I feel like this is a long, almost like a homecoming because you are a common name said in my household. And my wife and I have just benefited so much from all the work that you've been doing. And it's literally just like greatly impacted our health. So I'm very grateful to you. I'm happy to be talking to you today.
Well, I think that's a mutual admiration society because your work has really helped my own personal journey for healing myself and my past and relationships and love. And it's great that we can help each other.
Thank you.
Your first book was really remarkable. And they're written almost like prose poems. Mm-hmm. They're really easy to access. It's beautiful meditations on different aspects of our own soul and our own sort of psychology and our own relationship with ourself. And the inward was really about self-development and self-knowledge. Clarity and connection was more about interpersonal relationships. And your new book, Lighter, is sort of an extension on these themes. But it's more of a narrative description. It's less poetry and more actual discovery of who you are, what led you to become who you are, what you've learned along the way, and how that sort of informed how you live your life. So can you tell us about how Lighter came to be? What was the inspiration for the book? And what are the sort of key themes in there that people, I think, might be interested in hearing about?
Sure. So Lighter, it was interesting. When I started my writing journey, I knew that I wanted to, at some point, put together a book that would have everything in it. And I've really started off with writing about personal development and started realizing through my own journey that, once I started getting to know myself better, starting to love myself better, starting to sort of give myself that hard medicine that I needed and starting to realize that, like, okay, there are qualities that are missing that I need to start developing. And not only for my own mental well-being, but as soon as that started springing forward, I realized that my relationships around me were changing. And that's when I started slowly going into the relationship and friendship writing that I've been doing. And really Lighter just brings that all together in a way that shows you where it's coming from as well. So my story is included in there and I get a chance to kind of connect it all to my background where, I was born in Ecuador, came to the United States when I was 4 years old. My family and I, when we got to the United States, we were living in Boston, was where I grew up. But we were experiencing really extreme poverty and the difficulty of, my mom, she worked cleaning houses. My dad worked at a supermarket. So we were really stuck in a poverty trap. And that that tension that we would feel as a family, it feels akin to, a submarine that has gone way too far into the water. And the pressure is just like starting to cave in. And that really made some big imprints in me where I felt so much sadness, anxiety, sort of a scarcity mindset that started developing. And it snowballed into some pretty bad habits as I got older. And when I realized that my mind was just incredibly heavy, I was like, okay, I have to figure out a way to make my mind lighter.
Mm. So you basically were in this sort of first generation mm-hmm. American. Your parents came from Ecuador to find a better life, but they kind of mm-hmm. were stuck in the fate of many immigrants, which are doing jobs that are low paying that, keep them stuck in the cycle of poverty. And you grew up as a child in that, which I can imagine really influenced your view of the world and your view of yourself and lack and scarcity and maybe even affecting your self-worth. Looking at your story, you talked about how you got into drugs and you were mm-hmm. doing all these horrible things and, you kind of were trying to escape or not feel, but something kind of propelled you to start feeling. And it was a particular event that happened. Can you share about that event and what that was? Because it's not something most people would want to get, but I think it's worth talking about.
Yeah, totally. So as I was mentioning, I was developing this ability to just run away from myself as fast as possible. And it was mediated through drugs. It was mediated through partying, mediated through, you know, just drinking and constantly externalizing myself so that I would never be alone. And it, you know, it got to a point where I was just pushing my body to the edge, like literally to the edge. I was so mentally unhealthy, so physically unhealthy. And there was one night where I just took a bunch of different drugs, and which was common for me at that point, but my body had had enough. And it got to the point where I just, my heart couldn't take it anymore. And I, you know, spent like two and a half hours laying on the floor, just trying to breathe myself back into life, because it felt like my heart was exploding. And it was interesting. I talked to, you know, I had a doctor, at that time, but I talked to them about a few months later, and, they said, "Oh, it sounds like you had a mild heart attack." And it was just a wake up call I needed. I felt like I, in that moment when I was on the floor, I was thinking about, you know, how much my parents had sacrificed and gambled for us to have an opportunity to, you know, move our family forward. And I was kind of just tossing that away because I was, you know, I had no process to be able to handle my emotions or deal with them, or even to take a look into the past. And I just didn't have the courage at the time. But then I knew that if I was going to live, if I was going to really be able to access and create a new life, that the only way to do that was to be able to feel, to let myself feel and be honest about what's in there.
Quite amazing. I think, you know, from that point of pain, somehow you've, you know, come to sort of understand how to navigate a very complicated world of emotions and triggers and relationships and feelings around self-worth and self-knowledge that are hard to come by, that they're sort of, you know, when I read your stuff, I'm like, this is sort of the ancient wisdom of, you know, Eastern philosophy, of Christian mystics, of the Kabbalists, of like, this is sort of like the stuff we're all looking for. And, you know, like, you know, one of the things you recently shared on social media, you said real maturity is noticing your own inner turbulence and pausing before you project how you feel onto what's happening around you. I mean, just in that little nugget is so much wisdom about how our psychology works, is we project our own view of reality onto the world around us and we create meaning from it. And our interpretation of what that is causes us to be joyful or have suffering or be happy or sad or whatever it is that we create. And so like these insights don't come easy. But you're just full of them and you're full of a way of sort of expressing them. And you talk about how this creativity came from your meditation practice. Somehow you went from this party animal doing drugs, almost killing yourself, to almost being like a Zen monk who goes, you said you just came back from a 10-day meditation retreat. And you're finding a way to sort of navigate this both, you know, not just, in the monastery, let's say, but actually in your relationship with your partner, in the work you do in the world. How did you come to kind of get so wise so young and early?
It's funny. I feel like what I've really have done and have accomplished is being able to just put myself on the path. Like I have focused on really learning the Buddhist teaching, and I've been really fortunate to, you know, find a practice that really works for me. And that's something that I try to encourage to a lot of people, is whether you're into meditation or not, because people have a lot of you know, they go through so many different types of trauma, the amount of accumulations that they acquire over their lifetime that affects their mind. It allows them to do different practices, and it'll, you know, connect you with something that hopefully meets you where you're at. And for me, it was this Vipassana meditation in the Goenka style. And what I've done is just, you know, I did my first course in July of 2012. And that was about almost exactly a year after that rock bottom moment. And what I noticed was that, you know, not only was it just incredibly difficult, that first course is rough.
So for those who don't know what that is, tell us what that is. What is a Vipassana?
Yeah. So these are silent 10-day courses in a very sort of, rigorous Burmese style. And Goenka is a teacher who was taught by his teacher, Seyajiu Bakin. And these teachings all originate from the Buddha's original teachings that emerged 2,600 years ago. And these are, right, silent 10-day courses where you're meditating about 11 hours a day. And you start off the first 3 days. So you take the vow of silence. You start off 3 days being aware of the breath so you can concentrate and calm your mind. And after that, they give you the actual Vipassana practice where you start learning how to observe reality within the framework of the body. And that ultimately introduces you to the truth of impermanence. And that truth of impermanence is so powerful that it's really the gateway to all the rest of wisdom. It's really the gateway to you learning about yourself fundamentally as, you know, in your own lifetime, like how you function, but it also shows you how the universe functions. And I really credit, you know, all that I've written and whatnot. It's all profoundly inspired by these truths that I've, you know, come into contact with as I've been meditating. And I'm not a perfect person. I'm not, you know, I don't pretend to be enlightened or anything like that. I still have a lot of rough edges, but I'm just another person that's, you know, on the path like everybody else.
Well, I mean, that, I want to sort of come back to that concept of impermanence, because I think most people don't know what that is. I mean, those who are familiar with Buddhist teachings and Buddhism, mm-hmm. I actually majored in Buddhism in college. I don't know if you know
really?
That.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah. I'm a little weird. I was joking. I have ODD. I'm odd. And it was really, you know, back then that, you know, it was 40 plus years ago that I did my first 10-day mm-hmm. meditation retreat. And, you know, watching your mind for 12 hours a day, mm-hmm. We had the harder version. It was the Zen version, which was 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
and you know, that concept is hard for people to grasp, because I think most of our suffering comes, and this is really the core of the Buddhist teaching, most of our suffering comes from our attachment and mm-hmm. holding on to things and wanting them to be the same. And yet the nature of the universe is that things change
constantly.
And are not the same.
Exactly.
And are constantly changing, whether it's the weather or whether mm-hmm. it's your body or whether it's your relationships or whatever it is. And I think our stuckness in wanting things to be the same and not being comfortable with the uncertainty of impermanence is what caused a lot of suffering. So can you talk more about this concept of impermanence from your perspective,
maybe
the Buddhist perspective, and then how we play with that is as a doorway to becoming happy and joyful.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the suffering that we encounter in our minds is because we reject impermanence, we reject change, and that creates so much mental tension, so much mental struggle, because we, you know, there are things that we really like in life, and we want them to stay the same. We want the people that we like to be there. We want the situations to remain in a way that continue feeding that sort of calmness and pleasantness of life. But the reality is that at the mental level, at the atomic level, at the physical level, at the cosmic level, at the most minute levels possible, everything is constantly, constantly changing. And if we don't embrace that truth, that sort of natural flow of nature that's just constantly moving forward, then it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot, because no matter how hard we try, we just can't keep things the same. We may be able to elongate things sometimes, but ultimately, whatever arises will pass away. And that doesn't need to be a truth that strikes fear in you. And that's something that I've been sort of working on in my own life and writing about, is that a lot of times our relationship with change is one that's based on fear, but it can actually be you know, that relationship can be evolved into one that's quite inspiring, where I know that I'm not always going to be here. I know that this situation won't be here. So let me bring presence into this situation. Let me bring my attention here. Let me really try my best to connect with the people who are around me, who are crossing my path in this moment, because it's a special, like, we're not always going to have this. So like, what that has done, it's morphed my relationship with my wife, morphed my relationship with my mom and dad. And these moments that we do share and we're able to connect, it's like, wow, like, they're so precious. And I'm more so grateful to change, because if you think about it fundamentally, if the universe wasn't constantly changing, if everything was static, you and I would not be here. Nothing would exist. There would be, no one would be here. So because of change, you and I can exist. We can learn, we can love, we can grow, we can, you know, really flourish and evolve. So change is difficult, but it also gives us an incredible opportunity.
It's true, but it's a tough one for people because people get comfortable with the way things are and they live in the fear of what's not here, or what's going to change. And I, you know, I can tell you at 63, I just turned 63, and impermanence definitely has a lot more relevance for me now.
I bet, yeah.
And whether I live another 10 years or 50 or 80 years, maybe I'm hoping on dying at 180. We'll see how that goes. Maybe I got 120.
Do it for the rest of us, man. Yeah, I feel like it's a good goal.
Maybe I got another 120 years left. We'll see. Yeah. But I think, you know, regardless, there's an end. And I think the preciousness of every interaction, of every moment, of every person is really a beautiful meditation because it brings you into the present moment. Of course, if you feel like crap, if you're not well, if you know, so there's a saying that, you know, a healthy man wants many things, a sick man wants one thing, right?
Yep.
I think so there is for sure that. And I think I personally have become much more clued into the preciousness of everything, like in every moment and every sunset of every experience I'm having. And you know, David White, who's a poet who I love, talks about being in friendship with all things, which is realizing that you're in relationship with everything. The Native Americans have a prayer called Mtakwayasini, which means like to all my relations, to all the living and breathing things, to the rocks, everything. Literally, you're in relationship with everything all the time. And I think we get pulled out of that when we're so attached to our own sort of individual self, our own ego, our own sense of separateness, which is really an illusion. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Mark. I'm excited to share with you a brand that I trust whose product I've seen value in firsthand, Inside Tracker. Inside Tracker is a wellness tracker that uses science and technology to deliver ultra-personalized healthcare guidance. Their cutting-edge algorithmic engine analyzes your blood, your DNA, your lifestyle habits, and then gives you an actionable set of recommendations to help you meet your health and wellness goals. Since 2009, Inside Tracker's science team from Harvard, Tufts, MIT have been bringing personalized nutrition and wellness to the world with a powerful evidence-based digital platform. Their guiding principle is that your body is unique, so your nutrition, exercise, wellness plans should be too. And that's why Inside Tracker gives you optimal biomarker zones and a customized dashboard to help you change your body for the better. My team tried Inside Tracker and they loved it. They discovered some important things about their health that led them to adopt improvements like taking a vitamin D supplement after seeing they were deficient or eating more iron-rich foods due to low ferritin and hemoglobin, and making an effort to embrace stress reduction techniques after seeing high cortisol levels. And not for me, of course, I promise that. If you're curious about getting your own health program that's tailored to your unique needs, I highly recommend checking out Inside Tracker. Right now, they're offering my community 20% off at insidetracker.com/Dr. Hyman. That's DRHYMAN. That's InsideTracker, InsideTracker.com/Dr. Hyman, DRHYMAN. And you'll see the discount code in your cart. Magnesium is one of the most important minerals for all aspects of our health. It participates in maybe over 600 different biochemical reactions in your body, and yet over 80% of us don't get enough magnesium on a regular basis. Magnesium deficiency can increase your risk of all diseases and keep you from performing optimally. Unfortunately, it's almost impossible to get enough magnesium intake through your food alone because our soil is so depleted and has no organic matter because of how we farm, which prevents the plants from taking this important mineral up. Thankfully, Bioptimizers has a solution. Their magnesium breakthrough supplement is the only product on the market with all 7 types of magnesium, and it's especially formulated to reach every tissue in your body to provide maximum health benefits, from reducing stress to improving sleep and boosting your energy levels. Right now, in addition to the 10% discount you get by using the promo code HYMAN10, Bioptimizers is now offering you a special gift with purchase. Go to magbreakthrough.com/Hyman and use the code HYMAN10. That's magbreakthrough.com/Hyman with the code HYMAN10 at checkout to get your gift today. Now, this offer is only for a limited time. And now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. I'm curious about how you kind of come to share with people this sort of illusion of separateness that
it's, you know, it kind of, what you're saying now reminds me of something you said a little earlier. And there's that very common quote that's attributed to a number of people, but you know, it's, we don't see things as we are. We don't see things as they are. We see them as we are. Mm-hmm. And what I try to do with some of my writing is like expand on that, right? When we're interacting with reality, what is our perception doing? Our perception is actually seeing reality through our emotional history. It's seeing reality and not just through that emotional history that we carry from our past, but it's combined with whatever is our current emotion. So we're seeing reality through these really thick lenses, and that sort of enhances that attachment that we have towards basically tying whatever we're seeing in the present to something that happened in the past. And if anything in the present is sort of slightly reminding us of something positive or negative from the past, then immediately our emotions will just flow in these old directions and we'll be repeating the past over and over again. So that creates a situation where I may be meeting someone and I won't be able to fully appreciate them because I'll just be seeing them through my own gunk, through all the old sort of conditioning that I've been carrying in my mind. And you won't be able to see that sort of unity or the potential love or the depth of a connection that could really be there because you're just looking at them through the unhealed parts of yourself.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, some of the things, you know, that I think happen in this sort of framework of personal development, self-help and growth is this phenomenon called spiritual bypass.
Sure.
Where people can, you know, do all the yoga and meditation, mm-hmm. all these practices, mm-hmm. but they really haven't dealt with their fundamental framework and beliefs and their conditioning, whether it's their epigenetics and inheriting trauma from past generations, mm-hmm. and just being a human on the planet, you know, right. Let's face it, it's been a hard thing over the last few hundred thousand years. And that's literally wired into our DNA, whether it's our own trauma from our own personal stories. And I sort of really have had a lot of recent sort of relationship with, you know, the world I came into with my mother mm-hmm. and father being in a very conflictual relationship, my father not wanting me, my wanting an abortion. I mean, my mother being alone and depressed, you know, during her pregnancy and me being born into this environment and what that did just to my epigenetics and, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, activating my sympathetic nervous system in the world as a place of danger and having to just deal with that. And each of us have our own story. And so how do we sort of deal with the traumas and whether they're big traumas like abuse or micro traumas of just, you know, growing up in a dysfunctional family or a relationship.
Right.
How do we take the things that you've learned as mm-hmm. part of your self-discovery and discovery of how to be in relationship to yourself and relationship to others and sort of heal that without doing the spiritual bypass?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I find that this really sort of brings in what we were talking about in regards to impermanence, because we want to allow impermanence to influence our understanding of our own identity. So we should allow ourselves to learn about our past, to see the way, you know, our relationship with our parents and whatnot affects the way that we show up in life today and allow these things to inform us. But the moment that our trauma becomes our identity, then it makes for a very rigid healing situation. Because if we're like, oh, this is how I am because of this moment and I'm always going to be like this, or this is how I constantly see myself, then it's going to slow down your evolution. So in some ways, I think we can do our best to understand ourselves, but then we also have to let it go because it's like, okay, I'm a changing, growing being. So let me flow with nature and allow myself to develop new interests, new likes, you know, let go of old parts of myself that don't really serve me anymore and start letting my idea of who I am just continue blossoming. And in terms of spiritual bypassing, I think it's tough because the human mind can only process so much information at once. That's the reality of it, is that we mm-hmm. can't process everything at once. And I think we get a little confused by the fact that the technological world of today is so fast and information is constantly coming our way. We're constantly being inundated and it's exhausting. You know, you don't quite realize how much you take in and how much energy that burns because you're processing all of that. So at one, you know, one of our challenges is to be able to develop our awareness and expand our awareness, but also in a sustainable manner, because there are times where, you know, you're going through a hard time and, you know, staying connected to every single part of everything that's happening in the world, that may not actually serve you. And in other times, you know, you want to be active, you want to be out there, you want to stay very informed, but those may be, you know, one year of your life versus another year of your life. and understanding that we have very different capacities. Like, you know, there may be people out there who can not only, you know, have a beautiful business, but then they're also part of all these different organizations and they're out there actively trying to change the world and they're, doing all these amazing things. And that's fantastic. You're helping all of us. Great. But then there are other people who have experienced so much trauma that all they can do is heal themselves. But that's also beautiful. You're actually serving us by just focusing on healing yourself. Because if you heal yourself and you increase your ability to love yourself well, then that means you're going to be less likely to harm yourself and other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. And I think you know, one of the most helpful sort of frameworks I've ever learned about my own mind is that every emotion, every time I'm triggered, every belief I have is just my own interpretation of reality that I project, my worldview onto the world. And so when I step back and go, okay, this is just like one version of reality. This is not necessarily the truth with a capital T. Then I can get free from believing all these stupid thoughts. You know, my friend Daniel Amen talks about ants, automatic negative thoughts, right? Where he says, don't believe every stupid thought you have. And I think a lot of us are so embedded with our thoughts. And that's the beauty of meditation, is it sort of creates this slowing down so you can kind of watch your arising and your coming and going of thoughts and realize that you're not your thoughts, you're not your emotions, you're not your beliefs, you're not your body, you're not any of these things. And I shared this on the podcast before, but I almost died about 6 years ago. And I really had, you know, was in bed for 6 months and just unable to function and lost 30 pounds and was in really just this almost vegetative state. And I wasn't anything. I wasn't my mind. I wasn't my body. I couldn't answer an email. I couldn't do anything. And I just lay there and I just got to be in the experience of this sort of place, which actually was very happy and blissful.
Yeah.
Even despite the fact that my body was in agonizing pain, I was sort of surrendered into this kind of peacefulness. And it's hard to explain, but I realized that at the moment everything changed for me. And the ideas that I'd had sort of conceptually became more experiential. And it was a very powerful moment to kind of start to sort of reorient my life to be more in integrity. And I think sort of the next topic I want to talk about was integrity and honesty. Mm-hmm. And I think you talk about this concept in your book, Lighter, radical honesty.
Yeah.
What's radical honesty and why is it so important to have that? And what does that look like for each of us?
Yeah. Radical honesty is just so critical, so valuable, especially as the first step. And even before I started meditating, I found that I had no technique. I had no process. I didn't know how to really engage with my emotions, but I knew what the problem was. And the problem was that I had gotten to that rock bottom moment by continuously lying to myself. I did not want to admit to myself that I did not feel good. And when I realized and I finally admit that, I was like, I'm not okay. Like, I don't feel good. I have way too much anxiety, way too much sadness. And that first acceptance of me just being like, okay, this is true. And now I can more so move forward. But I started realizing that I need to repeat that over and over again. Whenever I feel tension, instead of trying to, you know, roll up another joint or just go find some way to just run away from myself, let me just sit with this discomfort. Let me feel whatever's there, as opposed to trying to like scrub it away or ignore it in some manner. And radical honesty, it's a term that's been out there for a long time, but the way that I use the term is honesty between you and yourself. It's not about you and other people. Like, this is just about you and yourself and whatever is coming up inside of you. And I think that being able to develop that radical honesty, it's a critical part of self-love. And when you are able to, you know, see what's inside of you and accept what's there, whether it's good or bad, then that will actually slowly start building your courage, building your inner strength. And you'll start actually seeing that the sort of tough emotions that you're having, they're actually not as fearful and as dangerous and as scary as you originally thought they were. Because I would run, you know, as if I was being chased by like a, you know, an animal or something like that. And and once I started sitting with my anxiety, I was like, yeah, this sucks, but it's not that bad. I'm okay. Yeah. Like, this isn't going to take me out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so being radically honest is hard because you have to be honest with yourself. You have to be honest with how you see yourself and your beliefs and your thoughts, and almost take a third party view of yourself, because we get so attached to who we are and our identity and our beliefs about ourselves. And it's just so hard to undo that. Right. So, you know, doing this work and sort of letting go of these old stories and, you know, learning about letting go, how do we put that into practice? Like, you know, letting go is really hard. Some struggle with it. And we often make things harder for ourselves. So why is letting go so important, and how do we have to keep doing this practice of letting go as part of our life?
Well, this really, you know, to what you were saying earlier about you realizing how you were creating your own narrative of what was happening in front of you. And one thing that I really appreciate that the Buddha and my teacher Essen Goenka talks about is how wisdom is actually you being able to see things from different perspectives. So not just from your own perspective, but seeing whatever the truth may be from different angles, and being able to see your own angle, put yourself in the feet of another person, to just see the complexity of the situation as opposed to just creating some simplified self-centered story. That's just, this was not my fault, this is somebody else's fault. But seeing your own, you know, what is the role that you played in this situation, and how may someone else have seen it? I think that can be so informing to your ability to let go, because that's probably one of the first things we need to let go of is like, okay, I do have this one perception of what's happening in this moment, but there's more to understand, and people are seeing this in other ways. But letting go, I think it's the crux of healing. It's quite necessary to be able to even somehow process your emotions and let them go, because we don't realize that as soon as we're born, right, we're constantly reacting, and every reaction, it creates an imprint on the mind. It molds the subconscious. And this doesn't stop at childhood. And I think that's one of the things that I think a lot of modern therapists kind of really hone in on, those like first 7 or so years of life. And they're very formative, but it doesn't stop there. You know, the big events that happen to you later, you know, the heartbreaks, the loss, the, you know, the accident that you were talking about that you went through, these created massive imprints in your mind that are still playing themselves out, that are still affecting the way that you act now, but you're acting now in relation to what happened before. And the letting go part is letting go of the energy of the past that you're still carrying, that you're still bringing into the present over and over again. And the beautiful part of this modern age that we live in is that there's a lot of ways to let go. You know, like I let go through meditating. Other people let go through the, you know, the practices that their therapist may teach them. There's just a lot of different ways to go about it. And there's no like sort of 1 to 5 step, like this is how you let go. But knowing that the letting go often involves, really always involves, you coming back to the present moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's hard because we do get so attached to our worldview, and it's, and we think, you know, it sort of come apart if we actually let go of what happened to us, or if we move on, or if we don't hold on to things. But, you know, I think we tend to poison ourselves by this constant holding on to our ways of seeing in whether it's in relationship or to ourselves. And I think one of the challenges for people, and I noticed this for myself, which people may find hard to explain, given that I'm successful and, you know, blah, 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 is, you know, I realized that, you know, I had a certain level of self-worth and self-love, but I really wasn't fully in it. And it sort of undermined my ability to love others, to actually choose the things that were good for me in life, to say yes to what was good and to say no to what didn't resonate with me. And so how do you kind of help guide people towards more self-acceptance, more self-love, more self-worth? Because it's sort of easy to talk about, but it's hard to do.
Yeah, it is hard to do. And it's also hard to do in relation to like what society has, or like what consumerism has created in regards to self-love, where it's, you know, self-love in terms of just kind of pleasing yourself, just like buying more things, giving your, you know, just the consumerist aspect of it. But I think real self-love, it is you basically trying actively and continuously to get to know yourself and to do whatever it is you need to do to heal yourself and free yourself. So that's self-love. It's really an internal dynamic. And It is hard. It's not something that's going to be easy, but the reason that we come back to it, the reason that I keep coming back to it personally is like, I literally can't make a bigger investment. Like, it's the best investment that I could make. You know, I could, you know, be out there working and doing all these things, but all of it will just not, whatever I may produce will not be as good if I don't have a strong ability to accept myself deeply, a strong ability to balance that with self-love and understand that, you know, I should love myself deeply, but there's also things that I can, you know, different directions that I can grow in that will help me become a better version of myself and just continue showing up into the world in a way that, you know, honors the emotions that I'm feeling, but is still, you know, showing up in a way that I feel really genuinely good about.
Yeah. It's sort of an internal journey first, but then, you know, the harder part is in being in a relationship, right? With our family, our coworkers, yeah. Or our partner. You know, Ram Dass talks about how, you know, if you think you're enlightened, just go home for Thanksgiving, right?
Right.
And I think that's the challenge for many of us, is that we sort of seem to maybe construct our reality where we think we're moving in the right direction. We may be, but then, you know, we find ourselves in relationship acting out these old unconscious patterns. So how can our relationships be part of our healing as opposed to creating more trauma for us, which they often do?
Yeah. It's tough because relationships are sort of like incubators for growth, whether we want them to be or not. You know, they really accelerate us seeing the different parts of ourselves that are good and the really tough parts. I think whenever egos are in proximity of each other, it's only a short limited amount of time until there's conflict, because egos are rough, and when they rub up against each other, the friction is created. So we cannot help but find, you know, difficulties in the people that we love, but being able to understand that it's not just about them, that the initial reaction may be you pointing the finger and being like, you made me feel this way. But when you develop self-awareness and you start realizing that actually, you know, I may have actually just gotten less hours of sleep last night, and this is why I woke up and didn't feel good. But then my mind wanted to figure out how this is your fault and place the blame on someone else. So
yeah,
there's one common practice that my wife and I try to do is we do our best to let each other know where we are in our emotional spectrum. And we let each other know, like, how do I feel right now? Instead of it sort of snowballing into this bigger narrative, we try to cut that narrative by just being in contact with each other about how we feel in the moment pretty constantly.
Mm. And so you wake up in the morning and you go, hey, I'm feeling this. How are you feeling? Or how do you do that in practice? You have like a time to check in every day? Or
so the practice is really, you know, it's us checking in first thing in the morning. It's just letting us know, like, okay, either I feel like a lot of anxiety passing through me right now, or I feel heavy right now, or my mood feels really short. That information not only helps the person who's feeling it acknowledge and own the fact that, okay, I don't feel great right now, and I'm not going to try to fake it. And it lets your partner know, okay, that, you know, let me figure out ways to support them or just give them space or, you know, whatever it is, so that we're both aware that one of us is a little short today. And it's been really funny because there was this one particular moment where, you know, my wife was feeling tough that day, and her and I were working in different rooms because we were both working from home at that time. And we hadn't talked to each other for about like 2.5 hours. And then she comes in and she's like, you know, I just spent the last like 3 hours trying to figure out how, you know, me not feeling good right now is your fault. And she was like, it was so crazy. Like, it was totally illogical. Like, had nothing to do with you. And there are these times where, you know, certainly the tough moments of our past will play into how we feel and how we act and really the way that our character shows up. But it's not always like that in the minutia of like regular everyday life, where really sometimes it is because like maybe the day before I had too much sugar and now my mood's super low the next day, or I didn't get enough sleep last night and now like you know, I feel tired. And what happens when you're tired? Then you get angry. You know, you like it, being able to be aware of these things and honest with yourself and your partner or those around you who are with you, I think it actually stops a lot of unnecessary arguments from happening, because surely sometimes your partner will say something to you that they should apologize for. But I would say 90% of the time, it's like you just jumping through these illogical hoops, trying to like create a problem when there really is not a problem there.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, that's a tough thing to do in the live action dynamic of a relationship.
Yeah.
But the more we can kind of slow it down and
totally
be in a non-reactive state, is better off we're going to be in terms of our own self-awareness and our relationships. And this, you talked about the power of non-reaction, but most people don't have a tool or a set of skills for not reacting to our feelings, not, you know, we have a thought,
right,
then we have an emotion, and then we have a reaction, right? And people say, oh, we have the emotion first. I'm like, not necessarily. It may be instantaneous, but we have some thought that triggers some almost instantaneous feeling, and we then translate that into some reaction or action. And that's a pretty universal human pattern. But how do we kind of create this more like slow motion where we maybe have this thought, oh, my partner just yelled at me, or she criticized me, or I think she meant this, but maybe she didn't. And then you have this feeling of rejection or sadness or hurt or whatever. And then you have your actual expression of whatever that is. How do you kind of break that down so people can actually have that present moment awareness to not collapse all those three things into one explosion,
totally,
which is what happens usually in relationships.
Yeah, these reactions happen incredibly rapidly, and they do so because the past of the mind is so loaded and so heavy that it makes it easy to just react with the intensity that you did before. And it's funny, you know, because oftentimes we think it's this thought that is bothering me. But whatever arises in the mind, it simultaneously arises with sensations on the body. And the thing that we don't like is how we feel. Like, we forget and we don't know, because our awareness isn't sharp enough. Like, fear has a feeling in the body. Like, anger has a feeling in the body. Lust, like craving, all of these things, you know, aversion, they all have feelings in the body. And what we don't like or what we crave, it's literally the sensations on the body. And I think one of the best ways to, you know, even outside of meditating is literally slowing down. I think that is like the key, because the problem is speed. It's like you're reacting so fast. You just fall back into this, you know, habit pattern of reaction, of blind reaction, really, and slowing yourself down so that you can actually process and see the different options that are there, you know, options where it's like, this is how I normally would have reacted. This is what I could do that would be a little more helpful in this situation, or I could just walk away from this, you know, seeing more of what's there besides just going with the first impulse. Because the first impulse will literally just be you repeating your past. Whereas if you take time to slow down, if you take time to literally turn your attention back into the present moment, then you'll be able to come up with a much more genuine response that is connected to how you feel presently than just you repeating your past over and over again. We have to also remind ourselves too that when you meditate or when you're intentionally trying to cultivate any sort of quality in your mind, like present moment awareness, compassion, self-awareness, it's you taking yourself to the mental gym. Like, you have to repeat this stuff over and over again. It doesn't just happen. It's not easy. It's, you know, you can't just like run a marathon. You have to, you know, start the long walks, like start the running systematically and trying over and over again. And then the quality of, you know, compassion will be there. Then the quality of slowing down will be there, and that will help you. But I think it takes that intention of, okay, I see the problem. Let me try to slow down. Okay, I didn't get it quite right. Let me try again. Okay, now I was able to slow down a little bit. So there's a lot that you can do just in the raw form. But then other than that, like, I really recommend to people, you're going to want to find a technique that meets you where you're at, something that is challenging but not overwhelming, something that can really help you cultivate yourself.
Yeah, it's true. I think you have to be able to withstand and hold the physiology of emotion without actually letting it just be expressed kind of in a messy way.
Totally. I feel it without becoming. Yeah.
Right. And that's the hard part, is like allowing yourself to slow down enough to go, okay, I have this initial burst of like, my gut is, you know, tense, or my heart feels hurt, or whatever is happening, or I feel a flood of like heat in my body. You know, there's these physiological responses to what's happening. And we tend to just jump into whatever those are, but to go, oh, I'm just noticing, oh, like I stubbed my toe, it hurts for a minute, but it doesn't mean I'm going to die.
Yeah. Or,
and I think you go, okay, well, I stubbed my toe, it's not comfortable. But then you kind of have to be able to have a response and instead of a reaction. And that takes the slowing down. I think that's such a beautiful thing. I mean, you also talk about how, you know, part of the key to sort of living a happy life is sort of really focusing on self-love. And part of that self-love and acceptance is about, you know, kind of building these positive habits, right? It's honesty, it's habit building, it's self-acceptance, it's unconditional. And you talk about these three pillars that work both inside of you and also in your life externally to generate and support a kind of a really more permanent and deep sense of self-love and acceptance. Because it's not something that most of us learn how to do, is how do we love ourselves? How do we accept ourselves? And what are the practices we can do? So maybe you can share how you felt that for yourself and then your partnership, and then how, you know, you kind of maybe suggest for people to start to think about it for themselves. And everybody's got a different path, but.
Totally. You know. Yeah, I think, you know, the in terms of the positive habit building, right? Because a lot of what we want to do is undo the past by breaking down those like old heavy habits that we have that are, you know, semi-conscious or unconscious. And we want to build positive new ones. And like what I do personally is, you know, I meditate every day, twice a day. I meditate 2 hours a day, 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And I've been doing that now for about 7 years. And it has been like radically life changing. And I do that because that's what works for me, right? Like I'm very interested in learning. And I remember the first time that I took a 10-day course, when I spoke to my friends afterwards, I described to them, I was like, I learned more in 10 days than I did in 4 years of college. Like it really just opened up this whole new world. So that's why I put so much time. I like invest time into meditating, because it is like the crux and the root of all the other good things that are happening in my life, like my relationship with my wife, with work, and with any type of new endeavor that I may do. So in terms of positive habit building, that's key for me. My wife also, you know, meditates 2 hours a day.
Wow, and, 2 hours a day. That's a lot of time.
It is. It's a lot of time. But it's funny, though, even though I do that, I still find time to waste. You know, like there's a lot of time in the day that just gets wasted with scrolling, time that you're giving away to Netflix, you know, there's, or time just like, I don't know, like, I feel like this life, it's such a beautiful, bountiful opportunity. And I actually have been able to increase my production, after I started meditating 2 hours a day than before. Like I was just able to do a lot less things before that. So it you'd be surprised how much it increases your capacity. Because you're just able to, you know, see things much more clearly than just rolling in through the nonsense that's happening in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, we go to the gym, we eat well, we focus on sleep, but we don't practice what I call brainer size, you know?
Yeah.
Working on this thing, this gray matter that determines everything about your life. I mean, it's such an incredible thing, because, you know, it determines even how you relate to your body, how you eat, whether you prioritize sleep, whether you take care of yourself, like all the things that you need to do to be a whole person, to be engaged in life in a positive way, to be in relationships at work, to be doing your purpose in the world, to do your work, whatever it is, you kind of have to handle this thing between your ears. And
yeah.
Like we learn so much about all the other aspects of well-being and health, but very little about that. And that in a sense is the major determinant of everything else in our life, of our happiness, of our focus, of our attention, of our relationships, of our longevity. I mean, I just finished a book on longevity called Young Forever. And in it, you know, the mindset and beliefs are such a powerful determinant of our longevity. I mean, if you had, for example, meaning and purpose in your life, your life expectancy was increased by 7 years.
Which is
a lot. You know, that's 7 years. I mean, if we eradicated cancer and heart disease from the face of the planet, we'd at most get a 3 to maybe 5 or 6 year life extension.
Right.
So you're saying, like, it's like having a positive mindset is better than curing all cancer and heart disease from the planet, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, but having a purpose, that's really illuminating, because so when I go away to meditate, like earlier this year, January to February, I set a 45-day meditation course. And in
45 days, wow.
Yeah. And in those 45-day courses, there's a lot of people who, like my wife and I, were by far the youngest people there. And, but most of the people were 50 and above, and most of them were really like in their deep 70s. And man, they look great. They look great. Like, they're, you know, not only has like meditating for decades helped them like physically and visibly look young, but they have a purpose in life. You know, their purpose is to serve, because a lot of them are also like assistant teachers who are, you know, conducting these courses and whatnot. And, but it's quite powerful to see the power of purpose, because I think it can really drive you. And it's funny, because my journey started with the mental aspect. Like, I knew that I had to get my mind right for my life to just develop some sort of stability and harmony. And once I started getting my mind right, I was like, oh man, like, I'm really unhealthy. Like, I need to change the way I eat.
Yeah.
Change the way I eat, like start exercising more, you know, just and building that consistency so that I can, you know, make my life longer and be able to serve well. And I've been really inspired by, you know, the way you talk about longevity and talking about it as like being able to live well as long as possible, and not just about, you know, extending your life, like, you know, to be able to be 60 for many years, like over and over and over and over again. Like, that's so powerful. And I think, I've been really taking in the longevity information and applying it now. Like, I'm 35 years old now, but it's like, you know, start early, and hopefully I can be like a really dope, like 80-year-old, you know?
That's the plan. Actually, there's a guy, you know, I'm in Costa Rica, and in the Nicoya Peninsula, which is one of the blue zones right now, where people live very long. And there's a guy who tends the garden in the house I'm staying at, who's 80 years old, and he's works harder than anybody else. He rides his bike straight up this long kind of couple mile hill
to get
to the property to work for the day. And he's so fit and so engaged and so strong. And, you know, he's 80 years old. We don't think of a normal 80 year old being a, you know, a hard manual labor worker, but they are, you know, they can be, can be. So I think, it's powerful.
There, I wanted to tell you, there was a teacher who he passed away a few months ago. But this guy, he was like in his deep 90s, and man, he looked great. Like, he looked great. He would teach so many courses, and literally until the last moment of his life, like, he was like in the hospital teaching the nurses how to meditate, like, you know, and passed away so peacefully and quietly. And it was just like such a inspiring life to look at. Yeah.
That's true. I was watching a video about Dick Van Dyke, who's like, I think the guy would be dead by now, because he was like
in the 60s.
He's like 95 years old or something, and he works out every day. He's married to someone who's like 40 years younger than him, and he still dances. He still does yoga. He still acts. I mean, it's like people have, you know, the ability to be vibrant well into their later stage in life, but it's really about how we relate to our own minds that keep us young or old.
Yeah.
And I think actually that kind of brings me to the question of how did you sort of create this pseudonym Young Pueblo, because that's sort of an interesting thing to sort of have that as your,
forward
facing identity.
Yeah, it is interesting. I feel like, and it's also been a fortunate situation too, because as everything has been growing, a lot of the attention just goes to Young Pueblo, and Diego Perez can just kind of like quietly exist in the background. And I've been loving that. I think it's wonderful. But Young Pueblo, it means young people. And it's a name that combines my Ecuadorianness with my Americanness. And because in Ecuador, the word pueblo is used in so many different ways, but for me, it means, the masses of people. And when I started meditating, I was like, damn, like I'm really immature. Like I'm, I have a lot of growing up to do. But then I've always been this huge, history nerd. And when I started turning my attention to what's been happening historically, where the world is now, I was like, wait, the whole world is young. Like we literally still don't know how to collectively do these fundamental basic things, like the things that our teachers when we were in kindergarten were trying to teach us, like how to clean up after ourselves, how to be kind to one another, how to tell the truth, to not hit each other, to share. Like these are fundamental basic things that, we may be able to do them as individuals and in small groups, but as a human collective, like we haven't mastered these basics at all. So to me, Young Pueblo is like, it helps me place all of my writing within this context because it really feels like humanity is maturing, over this like 100-year period.
Mm. Yeah. That's beautiful. So it's really about sort of the maturation of our species and the sort of rising consciousness. So it's an interesting moment in history because maybe there's been many times like this in the past, but where there's sort of a rising consciousness and awareness and many people gravitating towards meditation, towards self-development, towards spirituality, towards psychedelics, and, across like really wide spectrum of the population, including CEOs and political leaders. It was really fascinating. And at the same time, there's all this division and darkness and war and, kind of really kind of dark aspects of human behavior. And so I wonder if we actually can come to a place where humans are more awake, where they are more integrated, where there is a better sort of framework for raising children, for helping actually to develop these qualities of self-awareness and self-love and self-mastery and mastery of our minds, which is really the key to a happy life.
Yeah.
As a doctor, like I can tell people to do what to do all day long, right? For me, it's not hard to cure diabetes or autoimmune disease or dementia or many, many things. Mm-hmm. It's about people, following the recommendations.
The guidelines,
that's like, okay, here's you have a human body. Here's what it takes to keep your body well and to cure disease. And we don't know everything about every disease, obviously, but for most of the stuff people are suffering with, it's not that hard. And yet people don't do it. And the reason they don't do it is not because it's hard. They don't do it because of what's in their mind.
Yeah.
And that's the part that I think is the biggest challenge for people.
I think it's funny because, I will sway back and forth because there are so many difficulties in the world and it is quite out of balance. But at the same time, like what gives me hope is that we really do live in unprecedented historic times. Like this is a time where all of the, Eastern practices that have helped people for thousands of years have become globalized, are globally available now. And similar with Western practices that have been developed over the past few hundred years that also are deeply helping the body and the mind, they're also becoming more worldly available. And I think now that the world lives in, we're in this place where there are literally millions and millions of people in the world who are meditating now. And there are millions and millions and millions of people in the world who are seeing therapists and people who are actively trying to heal themselves in a way where if you were to look back, like, I don't think there are these many people probably since the Buddhist time. But even then in the Buddhist time, there were a lot of people meditating, but it was kind of, focused in northern India. And now it's the world, man. There's so many people who are actively cultivating themselves. And one thing that I, have a lot of hope around is just that when you learn to love yourself better and you're actively cultivating that self-love, that willingness to intentionally or unintentionally harm another person, it also decreases because you know that that self-love is real if it slowly starts opening the door to unconditional love for all beings as well. Because self-love is not self-centered. It's a motivator for you to evolve. But in that evolution, it'll open you to the compassion that helps you see like, oh, it's actually to my benefit as well for the people, for my neighbor to also be healthy and happy. And building on these situations so that we're not as dominated by our past, so that, because, you know, if you look at things historically, there have always been groups of people who try to change the world for the better, but the failure comes in that they never change their minds, right? Yeah. So you can have these beautiful, powerful ideals, but then what happens when you get power, right? Power, it functions like a magnet and it will pull out the roughest parts of your ego. So if you don't meditate, if you don't, you know, have some sort of practice, then those roughest parts will start dominating you. And what will happen is that you start recreating the ills that you were once fighting against. And it has happened so many times historically, but I think this is the sort of silent movement that's happening now where, well, now we're actually changing our minds and we're still simultaneously trying to change the world for the better. So to me, it's like, that's my like shining ray of hope.
I think that's very, a very insightful perspective, which is that unless we learn, it's not about self-love or self-acceptance as a narcissistic pursuit. It's really about self-love as a doorway to greater love in the world, to more compassion, to deeper interpersonal relationships that actually help to heal what's going on and heal divisions and create more connection to ourselves, to each other, to the planet. And so once you develop those things, you can't, you end the process of self-harm, which is what most of us are in, a dynamic of some self-harm to some degree or another. And, you know, the Buddhist notion of compassion is important, but it's also not just out there, it's directed towards yourself.
Totally.
And you know, and there was a very famous guru who was the teacher of Ram Dass and Krishna Das, and, you know, for example, Daniel Goleman, who wrote Emotional Intelligence, and many others. And he, you know, his basic message was really simple: love everybody, serve everybody, and feed everybody. And I think that everybody includes this, yourself. And I think for many years, I never quite got that. And so I think that's a sort of a beautiful message of learning how to build the awareness, the practices, the tools, whether it's meditation or other practices. And there are many practices. I, for example, use really deep journaling for my own self-awareness, which was, you know, what is all this shit my head saying? if you actually recorded what your inner dialogue was and you wrote it down.
Yeah.
For most of us, it's like a nightmare. And if you said those things to a friend or a partner, things you say to yourself, you would be the loneliest person in the world because no one would be in relation with you. But we kind of put that on ourselves. And so learning how to change that inner dialogue, to put it out there as an objective sort of framework, okay, this is actually what this thing in my head is doing, and then create some distance and say, what is my higher wisdom have to say about what my lower self is saying? And having that pattern of awareness, that was a very deep practice for me that helped me see my patterns in work and life with myself that I really resisted, because we get so attached to our ideas and our sense of things. But it really helped me get so much freer. And when you're freer, then you are able to be in the world in a much more generative way, a much more creative way, a much more giving way, in a way that actually brings more light and love in the world rather than more darkness. So it's beautiful, the messages that you convey, Diego. It's really important. I think if you haven't come across his work, you should definitely at least follow him on Instagram, because every day there's like this beautiful little nuggets of wisdom and in meditation. They're very simple, but very profound. And they really are great kind of little guidepost reminders along the way about how to actually live your life. Check out his books, Inward and Clarity and Connection, and his new book, Lighter, which you can find everywhere. He's really kind of a light in the world. And I'm so grateful for your work and your wisdom. I wondered if there's any sort of other messages or things you want to convey about your new book, Lighter, or about things that we haven't quite covered that you think are important for people to understand about themselves and their own healing journey.
That's a good question. I think probably the last important thing to convey is that it's really be intentional about the moments when you do have a low mood, because it's really easy to forget how far you have come, how much progress you have made. And being able to suspend that self-analysis in those moments where like you just don't feel that good and you're like burdened by anxiety or sadness or something thick is passing through your mind. You know, just allow yourself to do a little less that day, to relax a little bit, and to, you know, when you actually do want to do some self-analysis, you want to examine yourself from when you started to where you are now, not from today to yesterday. Like from today to yesterday, it's just going to be some pretty serious ups and downs, right? So if you look at that healing journey, it's super choppy, super, you know, forwards and backwards. And it just reminds me of my own, you know, like my own journey with my health. Like I know rice wasn't good for me. Like how how hard was it for me to stop eating rice? Like only just now this past year am I comfortable with not eating it, right? But it took so long.
From Ecuador, so it's
yeah, exactly. It's like the key thing they're eating, but breaking, yeah. You know, breaking these like little habits that aren't allowing our best self to show up. It takes time. So it's really about repetition. And Lighter is really just it's a book that's there to help you sort of understand those like important thresholds that we cross when we're, you know, because there's chapters on self-love, chapters on healing, chapters on emotional maturity, relationships. And it's really helped to feed that like intellectual side of that deeper inner experience that's happening.
And it is such a beautiful title, Lighter. I mean, to me, I don't know what it really meant to you as you created the title, but for me, it's how do we live more lightly with ourselves in relationship with the earth and with our lives? And I think that's such a beautiful framework for how to think about things.
Yeah,
it's heavy. Being human is freaking heavy.
It's really heavy.
Being human now is heavy more than ever, I think. And, you know, we're closer to nuclear war than ever. Climate change, I mean, the inequities we're facing, and yet there's a way to live lightly and joyfully in the midst of it all.
Totally. And the, you know, the Lighter really kind of sort of points to the heaviness that we carry in our mind. And it's, you know, totally possible to relieve that heaviness through letting go. But the same Lighter also points to the fact that, you know, I really believe enlightenment is possible. Like I've come across some incredibly wise people in my life. But enlightenment is difficult. It takes a lot of effort, you know, it takes right effort. But even though enlightenment may be difficult, it's really possible to become lighter.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much for what you're doing, for the work you've done. I'd encourage everybody to follow you. Go to Young Pueblo. That's YUNG_Pueblo, PUEBLO on social media. Check out your website, which is also youngpueblo.com. And definitely check out the books, Inward Clarity and Connection and Lighter, which is a great meditation for the heaviness of the world now. And I'm really happy to see that it was a number one New York Times bestseller because, you know, that's not easy. And it sort of speaks to the resonance of the message that you have, the importance of it. And it's beautiful. So thank you so much, Diego, for your work. And hopefully we'll get to see you in person someday soon.
Yeah, well, love that. Thank you so much, Mark. And thank you for all the work that you're doing for the world, because you're helping us out in tremendous ways.
Oh, thank you so much. And if you've loved this podcast, please share it with your friends and family on social media. Leave a comment. Have you learned to live lighter in your own life and learned about how to love yourself and accept yourself and know your own mind? And we'd love to hear how you've discovered yourself, because it's something we can all learn from. And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next week on The Doctor's Pharmacy. If you like this conversation, I know you'll love my new book, Young Forever. If you pre-order this book now, you'll get access to my discount bundle with deals from all my favorite health and wellness brands. Visit youngforeverbook.com to order my book and get access to these deals. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do, and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter, and in it, I share my favorite stuff, from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com /picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter, and I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.